The following is an interview with Paul Hanna, almost called you by your cousin's name, by Virginia Hanna for the Kentucky Oral History Commission. The interview was conducted at Franklin Furnace, Ohio, in the home of Paul's aunt, Mrs. Dorothy Smith, on August 23, 1978. We're out here on the banks of the Ohio River, and we're going to be talking to Paul about his early life and right on up to today, or until Paul gets tired. Paul, where were you born?
Newark, Ohio.
And when were you born?
1941.
Now, come on, when's your birthday?
I had to finish off October the 9th, 1941.
And here you sit in your wheelchair, and you've been in that a long time. Now, I know all about this, why you're here and all, but I've taught so many years, and so many children don't realize what the situation is with the disease that you had, and they don't know how it works or how it affects people. And I want you to tell me about your early years and when you became ill, and then what you can remember of the things that's happened, and I'll try to help you along a little bit there with questions and keep the thing rolling along. But you went to Kentucky to live. You were born in Newark, but you went to Kentucky. Now, when was that?
I think it was 1950.
And how'd you happen to move that down there?
Well, that's where my dad's brothers and all of his people lived, his mom, dad, and all of them. They had passed away, his mom, dad had, that particular time. But he always wanted to go back to the old home place and live down around the neighborhood.
So he brought you
and the family from Newark, Ohio down. So we built a house on a piece of property that my uncle owned. We bought that off my uncle. So we built a home down there in 1950 to 51. We farmed some of his land. At that time I was about 10, 11 years old. I had about 20 acres of corn, this and that, and I took care of all that myself. At 11 years old, which most people don't believe.
But now I know that's true, and tell me what you farmed that with.
A tractor, Ford tractor.
Gray Ford tractor, wasn't it?
That was a gray, yes. 1946 Ford tractor, I think it was.
It probably was. I don't remember. I guess I just wasn't familiar with the model numbers even at that time, and I don't remember. But I know you were quite a worker. Now, you did go to school down there.
Yeah, in a one-room school that my aunt, she was a teacher there, Aunt Virginia.
Yeah, that's me.
She taught me the fifth, sixth, and seventh?
I believe
it was part of the seventh grade. Mm-hmm. Anyway.
And you got sick.
That's when I got sick.
Mm-hmm. Before we go into that, though, you had some awful good little friends down there. Who was your best buddies down there?
Well, my cousin for one, Tommy Hanna, mm-hmm. and then Carl Wells and Junior Wells. They was my best friends.
That friendship has lasted these 25, 26 years, I think.
Oh, yes. He comes up to see me once a year up in, I live back in Newark, Ohio now, at the present time, and he comes up every year to see me. And couldn't ask for a better friend than that.
Well, he's fine boy and got a fine family, and he was so good to me when your Uncle Ernie was sick. And of course our friendship started a little earlier with him than yours did, and it's really shows you that the old friends are the best friends. Make new ones but keep the old ones.
Yes,
now that year that you were 11, during the summertime, something happened to you. Would you tell me about that?
Yeah. I got sick somewhere around August. They took me to the hospital. August the 29th. Well, they took me to the Portsmouth Hospital and tapped my spine. They said I had polio, so they sent me to, can't think of the first hospital, but in Cardinal Hill.
St. Joseph, wasn't it?
St. Joseph Hospital in Lexington, Kentucky. And I spent 4 weeks in an iron lung. Had nothing sticking out but my head. It was a very painful and a scary time in my life. It still is to even think about or talk about it. But,
I know it's unpleasant to talk about it, and I hesitated to ask you to talk about it, but so many times my students say, well, I have to have an hour to go down to the health department and get the little sugar cube. Now, it's some kind of immunization, but I don't know what it's all about, but we do have to take it. And of course they're excused from school, and sometimes we just don't tell them too much about it. We let them go on hoping somebody else is going to tell them. And I think that it's necessary to get your side of this from, you know, firsthand. And that's why I have asked you today to talk with me about this, so that it can be listened to by children who've been fortunate enough to live at the time when polio has really been whipped. You said that you were 4 weeks in the iron lung. Now, I know I came to see you at St. Joseph's Hospital in Lexington, but that seemed so much more than 4 weeks to me.
Well, I was out and in for a year, out and in the iron lung.
Oh, uh-huh.
They transferred me to another hospital. But for 24 hours a day, for 4 weeks, I was in the iron lung. Mm-hmm. Then they would let you go outside of the iron lung for maybe an hour or 2 hours at a time. Mm-hmm. If you was able to withstand it. But each day, you just think you was going to get better, and you just couldn't realize you couldn't breathe, you couldn't move, you just lay there and you couldn't move. No muscles, no nothing. Mm-hmm. Really, just all you could see was your head. You thought the rest of your body was gone. It's quite an experience.
It seems to me that there was an apparatus, possibly a mirror, up over the iron lung.
There was. You could look down and see your face, or you could watch television. Uh-huh. And everything was backwards. People would walk in. Uh-huh. Television was backwards. It was kind of funny.
I remember I brought your mom and dad and your Uncle Ernie down to Lexington to see you. And then I think the next time I saw you, now let's go back just a minute. Were you just in Lexington 1 year?
Yes, they let me come home for 3 months, and then I went back for a little while.
Uh-huh. Do you remember how long you were there that time?
I'd say 6 months.
Uh-huh. Well, then after that, you went to Ohio. Is that right?
Yes.
We visited you again in a hospital.
In Magnetic Springs, Ohio, mm-hmm. Up around Delaware, Ohio.
That was supposed to be a rehabilitation center, wasn't it?
Yeah, mostly for polio patients. Mm-hmm. Let's see, I think I went up there in 55, maybe 54, 55. Somewhere around there. I spent a year the first time, then let me go home for a few months, and I went back. I spent, I think, 9 months. Come back home and went back again. The last time I was there was 1959. Since then, they've closed the hospital down.
That was such a beautiful facility and seemed to be so well equipped for patients in wheelchairs or bedridden. I wonder why they closed that down.
Well, Dr. Kiefer was the doctor, and two of his kids had polio at the same time I had polio. And he opened it up to help people like me, mostly just polio patients. And then he passed away. And after he passed away, the hospital just fell apart. Because his interest was just in polio. And after he passed away, they took in just anybody.
It seems with him being a doctor, maybe there ought to have been a foundation set up that would have looked ahead and taken care, continued to take care of people that he'd set out to help. That wasn't done.
No, it wasn't done. There was, at the time I was in there, there was a girl from California, Arizona, a man from Arizona. There was some over the United States there, because it was especially for polio patients. Mm-hmm. And the girl still lives in the town, and she's in a rocking bed. And at this time, she's about 50 years old.
What is a rocking bed?
Now that makes you, I don't know how to describe it, but you can't breathe without it. It rocks it all the time. It rocks. Mm-hmm. You sleep when you're rocking, though.
Is that the one that I might have heard called a striker bed, and it's like a wheel?
No, that's for people who have broken backs.
Oh.
And I've been on those a few times. It turns you over.
Mm-hmm.
It, from your stomach to your back.
Mm-hmm. Now, I saw that type of bed when Wayne Feldy's wife had her neck broken. That's why I asked about that. Thought maybe it was the same kind of thing. What did the rocker bed look like?
Just a regular bed, only like a hospital bed, and the head was rolled up and the foot was bent at the knees.
Mm-hmm.
And it just rocked, oh, I'd say, at 30 degrees. Just little ways.
Mm-hmm. Paul, going back to when you became ill, can you remember what symptoms you had?
I thought of that a lot. It's hard to... I know my neck was stiff and my head drew back. I was nauseated. And just so weak that I could hardly breathe. Because we lived up on a little hill, and I'd walk down the hill, and all I could do was make it back up the hill. But we just thought it was flu or the childhood disease. And then we went to the hospital, or I went to the hospital. They tapped my spine. They thought it might be spinal meningitis. But it was polio, they said. So they transferred me the same night to Lexington, Kentucky.
I believe you first had Dr. Isham. Is that right, or did you go to Portsmouth first, and then they sent you to Dr. Isham?
No, I went to Portsmouth first.
I just remember he was involved because on that was on Saturday that they took you to Lexington in the night.
Yes.
And on Monday, he came to my house and told me to take your sister and my two children to Ashland for the gamma globulin series, because that was the only thing that they had at that particular time that was any precaution at all against polio. And so I did do that, and my daughter got so awfully sick. And, of course, frightened me terribly because I thought, well, she's coming down too. Fortunately, she didn't. I think, as I look back, she's always been just a little frightened of a needle, and I think that maybe just the idea of the shot or the psychological effect was what was wrong with her rather than being physically ill. But I did get to keep your sister with my children while the first few weeks you were down in Lexington.
Yeah, she's up. Did she ride down with my sister to the hospital that night, or did you keep
No, it? She stayed with me.
I know they thought polio was catching at the time, but
At that time, Paul, several people in our neighborhood, or not in the immediate neighborhood, but in the general area, I remember a Munn girl from on Shules had it, and they thought was coming along so very well, and she was sitting in the floor playing with some smaller children. She could not walk, but she could sit up in the floor, and she died right there, although they thought that she was coming along real good. And evidently she had taken pneumonia and choked. And also a dentist from Vanceburg Was that Dr. Ross's daughter that had the polio, or his granddaughter?
I think it was his granddaughter, wasn't it?
I believe it was. But she was in St. Joseph's Hospital the same time you were. And because when we visited, we also talked with the Ross family. So you see, it's not just we farmers or teachers or what have you who have these things happen to them. The wealthy and the professional people, and even if you are a doctor, you just have no say of what's going to happen with you. But I know you appreciate doctors because they have probably alleviated pain and done some things for you, although there's a lot of things that they would like to have done that couldn't be done. Now, let's see, we got you back to Newark there, didn't we?
Yeah, I'm back to Newark now. But I just wanted to say that a lot of kids and a lot of adults at that time thought polio was catching. Mm-hmm. They were afraid to even get around me. And even today, they think it's a disease or something, and they kind of... But I don't know. I don't call it a disease. I don't know what you call it.
No. Right now, you are just suffering the effects of what the disease did to you many years ago. Now, I know you have some strange experiences there that I want you to tell me about just in a minute, but I want you to tell me now about your schoolwork. You were going to go into the seventh grade down at St. Paul when polio struck you. I think school was to have started the very next week. And what happened with your education?
Well, it just stopped, really, until 1970. It completely stopped. There wasn't no teachers, no tutoring in the hospital or nothing. And we moved from Kentucky to Ohio, and we still didn't have any help, so I took it upon myself to finish high school. So I had to start clear back to the third grade, more or less, and I finished it within 2 years, and I've got my high school diploma. I was hoping to go on to college, but I run into a few snags right now. So.
Well, now, Paul, since this happened with you, I know your mother's not been well. I believe she's got a heart condition. And I know your daddy died, the other children married. And how have you managed there to keep going? I know your mother isn't a young woman, and how do you get about, and how have you managed to do this much for yourself?
Well, my father died in 1967, and my mom's got heart trouble. She does take care of me completely because I'm totally disabled, I'm quadriplegic. I get around in an electric wheelchair. So we live in town, so I can go as far as the wheelchair would take me, which is around 30 blocks and back. But when I went to school, I'd had tutors come to the house. I didn't go out to a school. They would come once a week. That's how I finished school by myself, really.
So
they would grade the papers and bring them back and give me more assignments.
So you really had a lot of homework to do.
Yes, it was mostly homework. I would spend 10, 12 hours a day at times to try to cram it all in. But it kept me busy. I don't regret it. It was a lot harder, though. The kids nowadays, they don't want to finish school or nothing, but if they knew how hard it was when you become 30, 34 years old, there's nothing.
Now, you're telling me that it's easier to learn when you're
younger.
Younger,
you better believe it.
Yes. Also, now, we had you up to the seventh grade, but you had to start back about third grade level. How come? Was there that much difference in the qualifications in Ohio?
No, it's just that there was no schooling, and I didn't even pick up a book probably for 10 years or 12 years, and it just wasn't no way. You just forgot what you people, you just had to start, really, you start from the beginning.
Youngsters especially think we older folks don't forget anything, but anything that you don't use, I believe you forget or it deteriorates. Don't you agree with that?
Oh, yes. I don't like to write letters, but I find out if I write, the more letters I write, the better I become at spelling, and even today, yeah, you can forget fast, especially when you become older. I'm not saying I'm old.
No, you're but young, still, but it's been a long time.
But it's been a long time, and you have to...
And it probably seems long, well, I'm sure it seems a lot longer to you than it would be to an able-bodied person who can get out and get around. And I know that you haven't been able to get around under your own power for, what did we say a while ago, 26 years?
It'll be 26 years this August.
Well, this is the 23rd of August, and that'll be the 29th. It'll be 26 years in 6 days So, I remember that so vividly because that was Linda Hannah's birthday, and you children were all geared to go to her birthday party at Paul. And of course, Linda's going to be 31 on the 29. So we all bundled up there and went to Linda's party without you, not knowing you were as sick as you were. And we just, as you said a while ago, thought, well, another case of the flu. But has anybody other than your mother helped to wait on you or take care of you?
No, just my mother. She does the soul, keep taking care of me.
Mm-hmm.
No brothers or sisters, they're all married. I've got a sister that lives up the street. She takes my mother to the store and places like that, or to the hospital if I have to go back. But as far as taking care of me at nights and stuff, it's my mother.
Paul, over the years, I don't know if this has happened lately. I haven't inquired. But there for a long time, seems every winter you had pneumonia. Does that happen now?
Over the last 5 years, I've been about pneumonia.
Mm-hmm.
I had pneumonia 25 times when I moved up into Ohio. Mm-hmm. 25 times. Been Children's Hospital in Columbus, University Hospital in Columbus, Newark Hospital. I've been in and out of the hospital probably 25, 30 times. I've been in 8 different hospitals, I think, 8 or 9. 2 in Kentucky. See, I've been in 1 in Dayton, 1 in Cincinnati, 1 in Virginia, Delaware, Ohio, Newark, Ohio. I think I said Columbus. Different hospitals.
I know one time you went to Virginia, that was a rehabilitation center too, wasn't it?
Well, they like to call it a college. It was a college.
Uh-huh.
For crippled people.
Uh-huh. What was it like?
Yeah, it was like a prison, really. I would hate to say it was awful, but anyway,
I didn't
like
I just
it.
Want you to tell me the truth and tell me really what it was like and what you did there.
Well, they sent me there. Vocational Rehabilitation sent me there for evaluation. I spent 4 weeks there, and they evaluated me. But I was there 4 weeks, and they bathed me once. It was just hell, really.
Then when you came back home from there, am I right in saying that you went ahead then with your school?
Yes.
Uh-huh.
That was
right.
In 1970.
Uh-huh. And now I know you have an older brother. Tell me a little bit about him.
Well, he's 51. He lives in Newark, Ohio. But, I don't see much of him. He's so much older than I am that we really never did know each other.
Almost like two families.
Yeah, it's like, uh-huh. He's like...
More like an uncle, really.
Yeah, really.
Uh-huh. Then you had some sisters.
Yeah, I've got a sister that lives in South Carolina at the present time. She moves every 3 years, I think. She lived in quite a few states, and a sister that lives in Utica, and a sister that lives right up the street from me.
Now, actually, you and the one that you speak of being just up the street from you were the closest in the family.
Yes, we're a year and a half so apart in age, so we're pretty close together.
Yes, and you were always really good friends when you were little. You walked to school together or played together and worked together.
Yeah.
Actually, there wasn't much time for play, was there?
No, it was all work.
It really was.
I tell people nowadays that I got sick when I was about 16 years old because they don't believe that I ever drove a car.
Mm-hmm.
Especially if you tell them you drove a car at 10 years old, they don't believe it.
But now I know that's the truth because we live just a few hundred feet apart, and I know all this to be fact. And I remember the day before you became ill, you drove the tractor all day and worked there on the farm and getting ready, I believe, to gather some tobacco, as I recall. I remember, too, when you were a little fella, you were so very fond of fruits. Do you still like fruit?
No.
Don't you really?
No, don't like fruit. A lot of things I liked when I was a young kid, I don't like now.
Uh-huh.
And the things I didn't like, I like now.
Well, they say as you get older, your tastes change.
Yeah, I believe that.
Your mom used to make the most fantastic homemade bread, and my children always loved to go there when Aunt Edith was making the bread, and they got hot rolls or hot bread right out of the oven. Can you remember about that?
Oh, yes, I can remember that very well, but you know, you can always find somebody else's food you like better than your mother's there sometimes.
Oh, I could hit you in the head. I don't think that's true.
Oh, I can remember my Uncle Ernie. I loved his fried potatoes.
Yes, yes.
I loved my mother's cooking, but you can always brag on somebody else.
Yeah, but...
do anything. Get some fried potatoes from Uncle Ernie.
Yeah,
she made homemade bread and homemade biscuits.
Now, the light bread was what my children liked. Those homemade light bread rolls and the big loaves of bread. Every time I see my son now, he'll say, well, do you think Aunt Edith still makes the light bread? So one of these days, we're going to come to Newark and bring his family and get Aunt Edith to make some homemade bread.
Yeah, she still makes it about once a month.
Oh, golly, she used to make it two or three times a week.
Oh, at least.
Mm-hmm.
I know we got a little light blinking.
Yeah, well, we got a little light blinking, but we're going to turn it over and go to the other side now as soon as that kicks off. I'll tell you, Paul, you've been through a lot, and it's interesting. I know it's been a painful time.
It's hard to put in words, though, with how I feel.
Paul, now we've talked about when you were little and when you got sick and the hospitals you've been in and the schools you attended and how you finished up at home. And I wonder what you could tell children who say, oh, I can't or I won't or I don't want to do these things. What would you advise kids of today to do from, well, let's say from 6 years on right up to 60, if you want to call all those kids?
Yeah, I guess they're all kids. I don't know. You don't want to ever say you can't do this or you can't do that, because you can do about anything you want to, especially in these United States. I see men nowadays healthy, able to work, they're drawing welfare. Here I'm disabled. I'd do anything for money. I just can't. Kids don't want to finish school. They think, oh well, we don't need a high school education. We'll get it later on. But if there was some way I could have finished my high school when I was younger, but I'd probably been just like the rest of the kids. I'd have wanted to drop out about 9th or 10th grade, but.
I don't think you would, Paul. You were a very ambitious little boy. Now, you can't tell me that that you were lazy about anything, because if you were raising 20 acres of corn when you were 10 years old and doing it with a tractor, and that's not just you telling me that, I know that's the truth. I know you wouldn't have fallen down on your book work or anything else at that time. And as time went along, I'm sure you would have been even more ambitious because you saw the need then.
Well, I left school as far as that goes when I went to school, but I wasn't the smartest kid in school, but I still loved school at the time. And I did when I finished it. It was just that much harder.
Mm-hmm.
But I've got a lot of nieces and nephews that's wanting to quit school and this and that, but I try my best to keep them in school.
But even seeing the way things have been for you, do they still want to quit?
Yeah, they still want to quit.
For goodness sakes.
Oh, I've convinced a few of them to stay, but mm-hmm. but you can convince a stranger kid faster than you can a kid in the family, as far as that goes.
Well, I expect so, because they have only known you as you are now.
Yeah, uh-huh. They don't know me. Now they're all... hung up on that one. They were just little teeny kids when I was well, so they don't remember.
I expect David...
Yeah, I think he was like, he's 28 now, so he was about two or three years old.
Well, he wouldn't remember you.
He remembers me, yeah.
Uh-huh. But he wouldn't really remember. He'd just remember hearing them talk. Because I doubt if a little child that age would remember all these years. I've got some mighty pretty paintings that you did. Now, I want you to tell me how in the world... as disabled as you are, were you able to paint the Lord's Supper for me? And you painted a beautiful rose picture on black velvet, and to me, it's perfect. Now, I've got two good hands. My eyesight's good. I can move about any way I want to. But I couldn't do that. Now, would you tell me how you managed it?
I don't know how to tell you about that, but it wasn't easy, but it was something to pass the time away, and I can just use my thumb and forefinger. I don't have any movement. A little bit of movement from my elbow down, but not much. I just tell them it would, between my finger and my thumb, it took something like 150 hours to do the Last Supper. A few hours a day.
Now, how about the black rose? I think I recall that you told me that if you got a drop of paint where it didn't belong, that it ruined the whole thing. And I'm sure there wasn't a speck dropped on my canvas that or on the velvet that didn't belong there.
Yeah, that's true, but I think a person that's crippled or handicapped in some way is more careful than a person as well. They just want to slop stuff up most of the time, and I was very careful, very slow. Takes a lot of patience, and I have a lot of patience nowadays.
You are more patient, I believe, Paul, each time I see you. Do you notice that in yourself?
Yeah, you do. You get mellow mm-hmm. over the years, because everything you want to do, even the least little things, you go to the bathroom or anything, you have to wait. So you learn the patience. A drink of water or anything, you have to wait. And so many people everybody takes it for granted that when you have to go to the bathroom, you just go to the bathroom. Right. When you want a drink of water, you go get a drink of water. But it's not that way with me.
No, it certainly hasn't worked out that way with you.
You're in bed at night, I'm not able to turn myself over or anything. If I have to turn over, I have to wait. So everything's waiting my life, so I think I've got
now,
pretty good at it.
And you certainly have. Let me ask you now. I know that if you could have had one wish in all your life and had anything that granted that you would have asked for, you would probably have asked that the polio vaccine be invented are discovered before you were stricken.
That's for sure.
Now,
it was discovered, what, a year and a half or 2 years after?
About that, yes. Yeah. I don't know the exact date. I wish I'd looked that up before I came up here. But certainly that's one of the greatest things that has happened now in the last 25 years or so. That's so much more important than solar energy or
going to space or all that.
Oh, yes. And people are prone now to kind of forget about this. And I noticed in the paper that schools are having to say, look, if you don't have your children vaccinated or immunized, boy, that's a hard word for me, before school starts, they can't come to school. They've got to show proof that they have had these immunizations. And do you think it's fair that that the school officials can say, look, keep your kid at home if you don't care enough about them to have them inoculated?
Yes, that's mixed on that. A person should be able to choose what he wants to do, but if they're that dumb, yes, I think they should. The kids should have their shots before they go to school,
yes,
by all means.
Mm-hmm.
They're still out. People think polio is a thing of the past, but I think in Canada right now there's an outbreak of polio. I was reading in the newspaper, they think it's an outbreak.
Mm-hmm.
They've discovered, what, 10 patients?
I believe so.
So it's not a thing of the past by a long way.
No, but this is what I was trying to get at there, that people are being a little lax at having their children taken care of there. They think, well, it hasn't happened for all these mm-hmm. many years, so why should I have my child given the treatment? But I know that when my children were little, maybe we wouldn't have had to pay for it had we gone to the health department, but I took my children to the family doctor and we paid for the, I believe it was shots at that time that they gave them. And now it's like a little cube of sugar that they put a drop or so on and the child just eats that and they're not aware of what they're doing and or what's being done for them. But I don't believe that's charged for at all now.
It is. It's all free. It's no mm-hmm. no problem at all. And even if you did have to pay for it,
it would be
$10
cheap
or $20
at any cost.
Cheaper than
uh-huh.
to be.
Now, I may be wrong. Maybe I didn't pay for the inoculations that we got. Maybe it was the office call, and maybe I had them there for something else, too, at the time. Because as I was talking there, I began to think, no, that has never been charged for.
I think the vaccine has always been free, but you had to pay for the doctor's call,
uh-huh.
office call.
Well, after I'd said that, I thought, now I do believe I said the wrong thing there. So we just straighten it up right now.
Yeah, strike that.
Yeah, strike that one. I wanted to ask you how you got down here.
Oh, my sister that lives up the street, she brought me down. Okay. They brought my electric wheelchair too, so I can ride up and down the riverbank.
Mm-hmm.
Right now there's a big boat going up. I don't know what the name of it is. It's loaded.
Well,
it's more like a boat. It's a ship, I guess.
Let me see if I can't get the binoculars and see the name on the boat and see what we've got.
It's sure a pretty sight up here on the Ohio River. Across from McHale High School, I think, isn't that, Virginia?
Yes. They call it Greenup County High School now. Uh-huh. It's consolidated and has taken in all the high schools in Greenup County except a couple that are still independent. And we're across from the Brick Union Cemetery where Uncle Ernie's buried, and your grandparents and several of your uncles are buried there.
It's right across the river. We can see it. There wasn't as many trees.
Uh-huh. There's a new building development going over there. Housing, just beautiful.
Oh, is it really?
Expensive homes, uh-huh. And there's talk right now that they're going to put a four-lane bridge across the top of the dam. That's the high-level dam that's built just a few miles below here. Probably not more than a couple of miles below.
I doubt if it's much more than that. You can see it from this house. or camp.
Uh-huh.
Well, this one's loaded.
Wow. It must have about 6 barges and 3 wide.
Triangle Shipping and Cleaning Service Company Incorporated.
Comes the turret, huh? Maybe you can read it. Or was that what you was reading?
Jane.
It's a pretty good size.
I can't read the name on the pilot house, but it's Triangle Shifting and Transportation Company, I believe.
Couldn't get them adjusted in, right?
I just couldn't see it because of my glasses. They don't fit up properly.
Yeah, it's hard to look through binoculars when you wear glasses.
With glasses, it's real difficult. But isn't that a pretty sight?
Yes, it is.
I would guess that's steel on there, but possibly not. I don't know. You couldn't tell what to...
They seem to haul a lot of coal up by here. Mm-hmm. Know that.
Could be some oil in those front barges too. But isn't that a lovely sight there?
Yes, it really is. At night the sun sets on it, it's really beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
I don't think I could stand to live down here 365 days a year there, because I'm used to living in town where I can go out and visit different neighbors, and I have a few hangouts that I go to.
I thought you were going to tell me you couldn't stand it because of the fog and that it would affect your breathing.
Yeah, I have that problem too, but more is lonesomeness. I've got all kinds of people around me too, but I'm still lonesome.
Well, that's... Because
I'm used to doing what I can for myself. And
Well, I found when my husband died, Europe Learning, that you could be in the biggest crowd and still be so lonely.
That's for sure.
And I think you would find the same thing, because other people's interests are different from yours, and yours certainly different from theirs, and you wouldn't find that.
I guess you can be lonesome within yourself, period, if you have to make yourself happy.
That's true.
Wherever you're at or whatever you're doing, and I try to do that at all times.
Well, are you doing any painting anymore?
No, I give that up.
Did you really? And you did so well at it. Well, what do you do that...
That would be hard. It's hard to say what I do. But I keep books for my sister and her husband and my mother. I pay all the bills and take care of all that. I write the checks and send them in the mail. And I take care of all that. And I do some volunteer work for the Salvation Army there in Newark. They have a catering truck they serve meals on, and this and that, and I take the calls and then call men to the Salvation Army. Yeah. I've been going to meetings and that.
Well, now, I bet that's very interesting.
It is. I like to help other people, because a lot of people's helped me in a lifetime since I've been sick.
I remember one of the first things that was done, Paul, after you got sick. The kids from your school brought tobacco from their farms. Most of them had some kind of a little tobacco crop. Nobody had any great big acreage, but they brought a hand of tobacco, and then it was taken to the Maysville warehouse and sold. And this was, we thought at the time, that would go directly toward your benefit, but it went into the polio fund, which of course was helping you. I think now they call that March of Dimes. And
yes,
but that was an awful good thing.
Oh, yes, it was. Really.
And the kids just showed their love so much. Nobody had a great lot of material wealth, but what little they could do, they were so eager to help. And like you mentioned, the Wells boys there in the beginning. And you know that their love and affection for you was... really true, because they still stay your good friends and come and see you and everything, and that's so worthwhile.
And yet to this day they come and see me. Your friends, there's nothing like a good friend.
Certainly not.
He's married now and has 3 children.
Mm-hmm.
The kids, they're older now. They don't like to come up with him. They have their own things, but him and his wife comes up every year.
Now, did they bring the little one this year?
No.
Didn't they?
They had something to do.
Well, now, the youngest one, I thought maybe still came along. Of course, the bigger ones like to be with people their own age.
I think he was playing baseball, they said.
That's hard to think of him being old enough to play baseball.
Yeah, he's...
We got plenty of time there, haven't we?
Yeah, we got plenty of time.
Now, if you get tired, you tell me. And
I just can't think of what much more to say about it.
There's
probably plenty to say. There's a lot I'd like to say. We have to put it on paper.
Well, if we'd have made an outline and said, well, we're going to say this, we're going to say that. But I wanted just the way you felt and the things that you could remember just offhand, and we didn't really have to have any kind of format or anything.
Yeah, there wasn't no rehearsing to the
no.
to this, because I didn't know anything about it till what?
Oh, 10 minutes before we
before
started.
We started, so it'd be pretty rough around the edges. Just have to forgive all the mistakes, but it's just...
Well, one thing, we've stuck to the truth, and we've stuck to pretty well to what we wanted there of how polio did affect people. Mentioning that, how it did affect people, do you know the year that you had polio, Paul, there was a real epidemic?
Yeah, I forget how many thousands of people.
It seems to me like, this probably is not nearly enough that I'm going to say, but it seemed like 55 from our general area down there. Maybe that was of all of Kentucky, but does 55 seem like the right number that was at St. Joseph?
Maybe just around our neighborhood is 55, but I think over the United States, wasn't it more like 50,000 people?
Oh, yes. Yes, but I was thinking...
But just around Lewis County and...
In the general area that St. Joseph took care of and served. That number, 55, rings a bell with me. Now, that may be wrong, but I know that when we went down there, I guess we weren't feeling thankful enough, and as we left, we knew we would never be thankful enough for the good health that we and our children had, because everybody was in such terrible condition there. Of course, some lots worse than others, and there was people, I know we talked to parents who said, oh, now we're going to do therapy and we will bring our children out and we will do different things for them and it's going to be all right. But then later on we'd read in the paper where these same children had passed away, and you felt so helpless and so sorry for the folks who had such great hopes. I know your daddy thought, well, now one day Paul's going to walk, and he had that faith, but his hands were tied too. They're just all he could do was hope. And of course I think your mother did so much more for you than your daddy did, because I believe Raymond thought he was always going to hurt you. He didn't. And he didn't have the great strength that your mother had. Not physical strength, but...
Mental strength.
Mental and spiritual. And
I don't think he ever accepted me being crippled, really.
No, he thought, now one day he's just going to be all right. We're just going to wake up and this has been a bad dream.
And I did for the first 5 years myself. Uh-huh. I never believed that I wouldn't walk at least the first 5 years.
You remember the time that the snake got on your chair?
Yes, very well.
Now,
Carl Wells and I was talking about that when he was up home.
Paul, that's when I knew you would never walk.
That was one of the first moments for me, too. Because they had talked about scare tactics and this and that. There's nothing scared me any worse than that.
I'm sure there wasn't. That old snake got right up on your tray and looked you in the eye,
yeah,
didn't it?
Yeah, pretty close to it, I tell you. Really.
We often talked about that if ever there was a time that you would have come out of that chair, right then would have been
that
the time.
Mm-hmm. I have older people a few times where I live now stop me in the street and tell me it was all in my head.
For goodness sake.
Yeah, they do. Mm-hmm. That's the way they say it's all in your head.
Oh, my.
But then they're walking with a cane and wearing glasses, too, so
Sometimes I just say, well, why are you wearing glasses?
That's right.
Uh-huh. I guess
so. Well, and you started to tell me a while ago that children will come up and say to you what happened and that sort of thing. I'm not sure we were on tape. I don't believe we were on tape when you mentioned that.
Well, we might have been. I don't remember, but it's hard to explain to little kids, really up to about 10, 12 years old, what polio is. Mm-hmm. I'll tell them I have polio. They say, oh, is your bones broken? Or did you get shot in Vietnam? Or was you in an automobile accident? They don't accept polio because they have no idea what it is. No idea at all. Well, I didn't either when I was that age. I guess, thank God, they don't have to worry about polio nowadays for the vaccine.
Well, we kept thinking it back then, until it happened to you, Paul, what can happen? It's going to happen to everybody else but us. And I think we look at death like that. Yeah, someday you're going to die, but I'm not.
And that's true. Uh-huh. Everything is going to happen to the other person, but it hits any home. I think the doctors told my mom and dad, I don't know if you remember that or not, generally a dirty kid or a mean kid never caught polio.
That's right. Uh-huh.
There was a clean, a hard-working kid.
Mm-hmm. And there's nobody in the world cleaner than your mother, and I know that certainly there was nothing...
No harder worker, I don't think, as I was at 12.
That's right.
12 years.
But...
I think I was kind of a sickly kid, though, but...
Well, you were active. So active.
Yeah, we dug, probably 50 or 60 post holes around the house.
Uh-huh.
And this and that. I'd like to have a way to explain to little kids nowadays what it is. I don't like to say a sickness or a disease, either one, because that sounds awful, but I don't know what to call it now.
Well, the only thing that was a disease that I guess that you had, but right now you have no disease. It's just the effects of what the disease did to you. And I do wish that everybody would be able to see and to appreciate their own good health and the things that they can do.
Yeah, appreciate what they did have, yeah.
Right.
So many people.
One of the reasons that I wanted to talk with you today was because you knew how it was to be an active person and also what it is to not be able to do the things for yourself.
Yeah, there's a big difference there. I know a few people that's never walked in their life. They don't know what it's like.
No, they have no idea. And they don't miss it like you would miss.
Because I had both lives. I played sports and ran and played baseball, football, basketball, just with the other kids. And now, for years, I just sat and worried about it and probably cried about it. But now I just accept it for what it is and go on with my life.
Uh-huh.
There's no use to brood about it now. Something happens to my mother, I'll worry about that when the time comes. I don't know what'll happen to me.
Well, you just have to come and live with me. I'm by myself.
It might have to be that.
Well,
might end up in a rest home or something, but I'll worry about that when the time comes.
Well, if I were able to take care of you, Paul, you sure wouldn't go to a rest home, and I know that Winola would say the same thing.
Mm-hmm. I hate to be a burden. I hate to be a burden on anybody there, so I know.
No, I don't think that your mother's ever considered you a burden.
Oh, I know my mother.
And I don't think Winola would, and I certainly wouldn't. And anything that any of us would ever do for you, I'm sure we'd just consider it a labor of love.
Yeah, well.
Or an act of love. Yeah. Not a labor, an act of love.
We won't get into that.
No, because we all love one another. Your mom would do for me just same as she's done for you if it were necessary.
Because we could all die the next minute. So.
Why, sure. We don't have any...
We won't get into that.
No, we don't have any assurance of the next minute, much less the next day.
I like to just live in day by day and do the best I can each day and...
It's like the song, one day at a time.
Yeah, make new friends each day.
Mm-hmm.
Learn something new every day. When I first got sick, I wasn't even able to set up for a year.
Mm-hmm.
So they said the first 10 years that I'd recover, all I was going to recover.
Mm-hmm.
So when I first spent the first 10 years in hospital off and on, so I'm able to set up now. And
mm-hmm.
use one arm. What, 20% of the use of one arm?
Well, is some improvement, I'll tell you. Uh-huh.
And you couldn't breathe or nothing, so.
No, you didn't even breathe on your own.
I see a lot worse people than I am today, anyway. Mm-hmm.
Well, Paul, it's good to see somebody with the attitude that you've got. And do you know we've been at this an hour, and I'll bet you you're tired.
Yes, I am.
Well, I do thank you, and I love you very, very much.
Well, I love you very much, Angie.
I know you do, honey.